A sloth, a donkey, and a curious human. Send a prompt and see what they're doing. One hits a record with a question on his mind. Two brothers pick it up, see what they find. Corn takes his time, Herman's got the facts. Back and forth, they never hold back. My weird prompts, come on in, that's where we begin. My weird prompts, glad you're here.
This episode was generated using artificial intelligence. Please verify facts.
The paradox of trying to be boring is that the harder you try, the more interesting you become. Daniel's been thinking about this with Gray Rocking. He knows the technique, he's tried it, and he's found it backfires. People sense the evasion and pry harder, or they take offense at the minimal responses and the whole interaction escalates. So his question isn't what Gray Rocking is. It's how you do it so well the other person doesn't even see the act. How do you make the camouflage invisible?
And he's right that this is worth figuring out, because the situations where you'd reach for it aren't optional. Aging parents with personality disorders, custody, adjacent dynamics where you can't just walk away, traveling in a country where your passport makes you a target, boundary-violating colleagues you're stuck with for the next 6 months. These are people you can block.
So today we're looking at why Gray Rocking is harder than it sounds, what social signals you're accidentally broadcasting when you try it, and whether there's a way to actually disappear in conversation without anyone noticing you've done it.
Let's start with what Gray Rocking actually is, because there's a gap between the forum advice and the real-world experience. The technique comes from online narcissistic abuse recovery communities. Out of the fog is the one most people cite, and the idea is straightforward. You become as uninteresting as a gray rock. Short answers, no emotional reactions, no personal details. You starve the manipulative person of the emotional fuel they're trying to extract.
And in the forums, it's presented as almost foolproof. Just be boring and they'll lose interest. Which works great in theory and falls apart the moment you try it on an actual human being who's standing in front of you expecting a conversation.
The listener's experience, that it backfires, that people sense something's off and pry harder. That's not a failure of execution, that's the norm. The forums don't account for the fact that conversation has rules, and Gray Rocking breaks them.
What kind of rules?
So this goes back to the philosopher Paul Grice, who laid out what he called the cooperative principle. The idea is that when two people talk, they're implicitly cooperating. They both assume the other person is following four maxims. Be as informative as required, no more and no less. Be truthful. Be relevant. Be clear. These aren't etiquette rules someone made up. They're the operating system of human conversation, and everyone runs them automatically.
And Gray Rocking violates at least two of them.
Quantity and manner. The maxim of quantity says give as much information as the situation calls for. The maxim of manner says, be perspicuous, don't be obscure or ambiguous. Gray Rocking does the opposite on both counts. You're deliberately giving less information than expected, and you're being deliberately vague about anything personal.
So the other person's brain registers a violation before they even consciously notice it.
And here's where it gets worse. There's a phenomenon called the Zygarnik effect, named after a Lithuanian psychologist who noticed that waiters could remember complex unpaid orders perfectly, but the moment the bill was settled, the details evaporated. People remember incomplete information better than complete information, and they feel a compulsion to resolve the gap.
So by withholding, you're actually making yourself more memorable, not less.
You're creating an open loop in their head. Their brain flags the incomplete exchange and keeps poking at it. That's the prying paradox. The gray rocker's brevity makes the other person more curious, not less. They sense you're hiding something, and the Zygarnik effect means they can't just let it go.
That explains the prying. What about the rudeness?
That's the reciprocity norm. In most cultures, conversation runs on a kind of unspoken exchange. I disclose something, you disclose something roughly equivalent. I ask a question, you answer and ask one back. When you give one-word answers and don't reciprocate, the other person's social threat detection lights up. They interpret it as hostility, contempt, or rejection.
Which is escalatory.
Which is exactly the opposite of what Gray Rocking is supposed to achieve. You're trying to de-escalate, and instead you've just signaled to the other person that you're hostile. Their brain doesn't go, oh, this person is being boring, I'll move on. It goes, this person is snubbing me, and I need to figure out why.
So, the listener's instinct that they're coming across as rude, that's no paranoia. They're coming across as rude. The technique is doing exactly what it looks like it's doing.
Right. And that's before we even get to the cognitive load problem. Gray rocking requires active monitoring. You're constantly calculating what's safe to share, suppressing natural reactions, editing yourself in real time. That effort produces micro-expressions, delayed responses, and a kind of flattened affect that sounds forced rather than naturally calm.
Oh, the tell of effort.
People pick up on these cues unconsciously. They can't name what feels off, but they know something is. The prosody goes weird. Your intonation, your rhythm, your pacing. A naturally boring person sounds relaxed. A gray rocker sounds like someone who's trying very hard to sound relaxed, and that's a completely different signal.
Give me an example. The classic, how was your weekend trap?
Perfect. Someone asks how your weekend was. The social script calls for 2 or 3 sentences. You did something, you saw someone, you have a small anecdote. The gray rocker says fine.
Which is a one-word answer to a question that wasn't yes or no.
Right, it doesn't even fit the question grammatically. The other person now has 2 choices. Accept the violation and walk away feeling socially rejected, which most people won't do because that's unpleasant. Or probe further. Just fine? Did you do anything? And now the gray rocker is in an escalating cycle. Every evasion triggers another probe, and every probe makes the evasion more obvious.
Whereas a naturally boring person says fine, and then volunteers watch some TV, did laundry.
Same level of information, but delivered cooperatively. They've satisfied the social contract. The other person's brain goes, exchange complete, nothing to see here, and moves on. The information content is identical. Nothing personal, nothing emotional, nothing weaponizable, but the delivery makes all the difference.
So the problem isn't what you're saying, it's how you're saying it, and when.
And that's the key insight. Gray rocking, as it's taught in the forums, is reactive. You wait for a question and then deflect or minimize. But conversation doesn't work that way. By the time you're deflecting, the other person has already registered the violation.
So if the problem is that gray rocking violates conversational norms, the solution isn't to violate them better.
The solution is to stop gray rocking and start doing something else. There's a more recent refinement called beige rocking or bland broadcasting, and the distinction matters. Gray rocking is reactive, withholding, deflecting, minimizing. Beige rocking is proactive. You offer boring information willingly before it's asked for.
You fill the conversational space with low-stakes content, so there's no vacuum for them to probe into.
And the crucial thing is that you're not violating any norms. You're being informative, you're being cooperative, you're following the Gricean maxims, you're just being informative about things that don't matter. The other person's social threat detection stays offline because there's nothing to detect.
So what does this actually look like in practice?
The core technique is what I think of as the boring autobiography. You prepare 3 or 4 scripts about utterly mundane topics. Your commute, a TV show you half-watched, a recipe you tried, the weather's effect on your plants. These scripts are true. They contain no emotional hooks, no personal vulnerabilities, and no information that could be weaponized. And you deploy them when you sense a question coming that you don't want to answer.
Preemptively.
Before the dangerous question even arrives. Someone sits down next to you at a family gathering, and you know they're going to ask about your marriage, your job, your finances. You don't wait. You open with, I've been trying to figure out why my tomato plants are wilting. I think it's the soil pH. I've been reading about it. Now you've set the agenda. The conversation is about tomato plants.
And if they try to steer it somewhere else?
That's the second technique, the redirect to boring. They ask a dangerous question, and instead of deflecting, you answer a slightly different, boring question that they didn't ask. How's work? Becomes, oh, you know, the usual. Actually, I've been trying to figure out this new printer they installed. Have you ever dealt with a printer that just refuses to connect to Wi-Fi?
That's good. You're not shutting them down. You're giving them something, just something useless.
And it changes the subject without the other person feeling shut down. They asked about work, you gave them a work anecdote. The social contract is satisfied. The fact that the anecdote is about a printer rather than about office politics or your career trajectory, that's the camouflage.
The printer is the beige rock.
The printer is the perfect beige rock. Everyone has printer problems. No one finds them interesting. No one can extract emotional fuel from a story about a paper jam.
What about the travel scenario Daniel mentioned? You're in a country where your nationality is unpopular. Someone at a dinner party asks what you think of their country.
A Greyrock response is, it's fine. That's rude, suspicious, and escalatory. A Beige Rock response is, I've really enjoyed the food. I had this amazing street food near my hotel. Have you tried the place on 5th Street? You've answered a question about the country with a question about street food. It's cooperative, it's warm, it redirects to a safe topic, and the other person now has something to talk about that isn't geopolitics.
You've made them the expert on street food.
Which is the third technique, and this one's subtle. The best Beige Rocky makes the other person feel interesting. If you can get them talking about themselves, about their opinions on street food, about their own printer problems, about their tomato plants, they'll talk forever and never notice you haven't said a thing about yourself.
The mirror strategy.
You become so interested in them that they forget to be interested in you. And the beauty of it's that it doesn't feel like evasion. It feels like a great conversation. They walk away thinking you're charming.
That's almost unsettling.
It is. And it raises a question about the ethics here, which I think we should sit with. But first, let me finish the toolkit. Because there's a meta skill that determines whether any of this works, and it's reading the room.
Meaning?
You have to know whether you're dealing with a genuine manipulator or a socially clumsy but well-meaning person. Beige rocking is for the latter group. The coworker who overshares, the relative who doesn't understand boundaries, the stranger at a party who's just a bit too curious. These people will accept boring content at face value because they're not looking for ammunition. They're just socially uncalibrated.
And the former group?
A genuine manipulator, someone with narcissistic traits who's actively seeking emotional fuel or information to weaponize, will eventually pierce any camouflage. They're not following the social contract in good faith. They're probing systematically, and they'll keep probing until they find something. For that group, beige rocking is a delaying tactic at best.
So what do you do with them?
You need more drastic measures. The broken record technique, you pick a phrase and you repeat it verbatim every time they circle back. I'm not going to discuss that. I'm not going to discuss that. No variation, no explanation, no emotional reaction. It's exhausting for them because there's nothing to grab onto.
Or you just set the boundary and leave.
If you can. But the whole premise of Daniel's question is situations where you can't leave. Required family relationships, professional obligations, being physically stuck in a place. That's why the toolkit matters.
Let me push on the ethics question you raised. If beige rocking works by making the other person feel like they're having a genuine conversation when they're not, isn't that manipulative in its own right?
I think it depends on what you're protecting. If you're using it to avoid accountability or to deceive someone who has a legitimate right to information, that's manipulation. If you're using it to protect your privacy from someone who has no right to it and has demonstrated they'll misuse whatever you give them, that's self-defense.
The line is the other person's intent and their entitlement to the information.
And your own safety. The ethical framework that makes sense to me is, beige rocking is justified when the other person has demonstrated they can't be trusted with real information, and when the relationship is involuntary. If you're choosing to spend time with someone and then hiding yourself from them, that's a different problem.
That's just a bad friendship you should end.
Right. The technique is for situations you can't end.
So we've got the boring autobiography, the redirect to boring, and the mirror. What's the common thread?
All three techniques do the same thing structurally. They satisfy the Gricean maxims. You're being informative, truthful, relevant, and clear, while revealing nothing that matters. The camouflage works because there's nothing to detect. You're not breaking the rules of conversation, you're just playing them in a very specific way.
The difference from gray rocking is that gray rocking announces itself. The silence, the one-word answers, the flat affect, those are signals. They say, I'm doing something. Beige rocking doesn't signal. It just looks like conversation.
The best camouflage isn't the one that's most convincing. It's the one that never gets tested.
I want to bring in someone who's actually done this professionally. Hilbert.
I was a mystery shopper for 3 years. Luxury hotel chain. My job was to check in as a guest, spend 2 days on the property, and evaluate the staff without them knowing I was evaluating them. I ate in the restaurants, used the spa, complained about the pillows, took notes in my room at night.
You were being professionally boring for days at a time.
You learn fast. The trick isn't being boring. It's being boring in a way that makes the other person feel interesting. If you ask them about themselves, they'll talk forever and never notice you haven't said a thing. The best gray rock is a mirror. I called it the friendly void. You become so interested in them that they forget to be interested in you.
This worked on hotel staff who are trained to read guests.
Worked on almost everyone. Front desk, housekeeping, concierge, restaurant servers. They'd tell me about their kids, their career plans, their problems with management. Completely unaware I was taking notes. I was the most forgettable guest they'd ever had, and also their favorite person to talk to.
Because you made them feel fascinating.
People's favorite subject is themselves. Give them an opening, and they'll fill the time. You just have to ask the right follow-ups and never, ever answer a question about yourself with anything real.
Did it ever fail?
Once. Front desk manager at the Chicago property. I did my usual routine, checked in, chatted about the weather, asked her how long she'd worked there, what she liked about it. About 10 minutes in, she stopped mid-sentence, looked at me, and said, "You're very good at asking questions. What are you hiding?"
What did you say?
I laughed and said, "Just curious, I guess." She didn't buy it. I found out later she'd spent 12 years in military intelligence before she got into hospitality. Some people can't be fooled. The technique has a ceiling.
A former intelligence officer spotted you.
She was trained to notice exactly what I was doing. Asymmetrical disclosure, conversational redirection, the pattern of questions that never quite land on the person asking them. To anyone else, I was a friendly guy on a business trip. To her, I was a set of tells.
That's the limit case. Someone who's professionally trained to detect exactly the signals you're trying to suppress.
Here's the thing. She wasn't hostile about it. She just saw it. Which means the technique works until it doesn't, and when it doesn't, you've got nothing to fall back on except honesty or leaving.
Did you tell her?
I told her I couldn't talk about it. She nodded and checked me in. We understood each other.
Even the best beige rocking has a ceiling, and that ceiling is someone who knows what to look for.
Everything has a ceiling. The question is whether the ceiling matters for what you're trying to do. Most people aren't former intelligence officers. Most people will take the friendly void at face value and walk away feeling good about the conversation.
If you hit the ceiling?
Then you're in a different situation and you need different tools. But that's true of everything.
That raises the question Daniel's prompt is really driving at. If even the best techniques have limits, and some people will always see through them, what does that mean for how we think about social camouflage? Is it a tool for managing difficult situations, or is it a crutch that delays harder conversations?
I think it's both, and which one it depends on, whether you have an exit strategy. If you're beige rocking your way through a family dinner you have to attend twice a year, that's a tool. If you're beige rocking your way through a marriage, that's a delay.
The technique doesn't solve the underlying problem. It buys you time and space. What you do with that time and space, whether you use it to plan an exit or just to survive another day, that's the real question.
There's something else. As AI conversation partners become more common, the skills of reading social camouflage might atrophy, or they might become more valuable. If most of your conversations are with systems that don't hide anything, the ability to detect when a human is being deliberately boring could become a rare and prized social skill.
That's an interesting thought. We're already seeing people lose the ability to read subtle social cues because so much communication is text-based and asynchronous. Add AI conversation partners that are transparent by design, and the person who can spot a friendly void might become the exception rather than the norm.
Which would make beige rocking more effective, not less?
For most people, most of the time. But the ceiling still exists. There will always be people who can see it. Former intelligence officers, sure, but also people who grew up with manipulative parents and learned to read evasion as a survival skill. People with unusually high social perception. Anyone who's been burned by a charmer and learned to watch for the pattern.
The real answer to Daniel's question, how do you do this so well the other person doesn't see the act, is that you can't guarantee it. You can get very good at it. You can make it work on 95% of people. But the 5% will always be there, and you won't always know who they're until they look at you and say, "What are you hiding?"
The best camouflage isn't the one that's most convincing. It's the one that never gets tested. And the way to keep it from being tested is to arrange your life so you don't need it very often.
Use it sparingly, use it well, and don't mistake it for a permanent solution.
Thanks to Hilbert Flumingtot for producing, and for 3 years of professional blandness we somehow never knew about.
This has been my Weird Prompts. If you want to send us your own question, maybe one we haven't spent 4,000 words dissecting, email the show at show@myweirdprompts.com.
We'll be back soon.
This episode's script was written by DeepSeek V4 Pro, with text-to-speech by Chatterbox.
Thanks for listening to our show, My Weird Prompts, where odd thoughts go. From sloth slow takes to facts on cue, we chase the strange and follow through. Some nights it's news, some nights it's lore, a thought you've never heard before. The hosts dig in, the hosts dig deep. The stranger the prompt, the less they sleep. From tiny questions, big ones too, from half-formed hunches to deja vu. If something odd is in your head, send it in, we'll chase the thread. My Weird Prompts, that's the close. From sloth, from man, from long-eared host. My Weird Prompts, until next time, stay curious, keep weird in mind.